Ghosts, demons, and pale creatures galore. Prepare yourself for a very unsettling set of stories about things that should not exist. Stories alleged to be true by everyday people like you and me. Welcome back to Unexplained Encounters. I'm your host, Darkness Prevails. Today's stories feature plenty of ghosts seen at or through windows, tall and pale humanoid entities stalking people, and more. If you have a scary story of the unexplained, send it to me at darkstories.org so I can narrate it on the show. And help us grow by following and rating Unexplained Encounters on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thank you. Now, let's begin. Two stories from Jesse LG. Hands at the Window. When I was around 4 or 5 years old, my mom and I were living with my grandparents, trying to escape a dark chapter in our lives. She was pregnant with my little brother at the time, and we had just left his abusive father. My grandparents were the kind of folks who always had a full house, laughing, drinking, music, shouting. It was loud and chaotic most nights. But I liked the quiet. I would escape to my room and play alone, often making up my own games. That night I was sitting on the floor with my Monopoly board, pretending to play, probably just moving pieces around in a world of make-believe, the way little kids do. My room was small and oddly shaped, with a huge old family heirloom bed, which took up almost all the space. The only window in the room was across from the door on the far wall near my toy box and vanity. From where I sat near the door, I could only see the very top edge of it. Now, our house was a double-wide trailer, raised off the ground like most are, sitting on cinder blocks. That detail is important, because when I first heard the noise, it didn't make sense. It was a scratching sound, not loud, not violent, but it was persistent and sharp. It was coming from outside somewhere. That alone was odd, since that side of the house didn't have any trees or bushes. There was nothing that could be brushing up against the siding. I froze and listened. I heard it again, louder and closer, and I realized it wasn't just at the wall, it was under the window. Whatever it was trying to climb up. I remember feeling frozen. My little body was trembling, but curiosity pulled me upward. Slowly, I stood to look at the window, every part of me afraid of what I was about to see. And then I saw them. Two hands, dark with unnaturally long fingers, three on each hand, gripping the bottom edge of the window. They weren't moving, they were just hanging there, clutching the frame like they were trying to pull something up behind them. The screeching sounds below continued, faster now. I screamed. I bolted from my room, crying and gasping, trying to explain what I saw to my mom and uncle. I could tell they didn't believe me, but something about how panicked I was must have struck a chord at the very least. They followed me back to my room. Of course, by the time we got there, the hands were gone. My uncle peered out the window and shrugged, saying there was nothing there. But he went ahead and checked around the house just to be sure. My mom pulled the window shut, drawing the thin Little Mermaid curtains, and tucked me into bed with a soft, "It was probably just a raccoon." But I knew better. Even as a kid, I knew that didn't make sense. There was nothing for a raccoon to climb up. No trees or furniture. No garbage cans. And raccoons don't have long, spindly fingers like that. They don't hang like they're waiting to be seen. After that night, I never slept peacefully again. Not in that house, I mean. Every time we stayed there, and we did for years, I'd sleep facing the opposite wall, too afraid to look toward the window. I begged my mom to get curtains I couldn't see through. Even now, as an adult, I've tried to convince myself it had to be a raccoon, that maybe I imagined those hands. But deep down, I still don't believe that. And sometimes I wonder, what would have happened What would I have seen if the thing had lifted its head up and looked back at me? The Yellow House. At the ages of around 14 or 15, my dad, little brother, and grandparents took a road trip from our home in Texas to Tennessee to visit family. We stayed at this charming little bed and breakfast, back before Airbnb was a thing. It was an old yellow Victorian house perched on a hill, with a river winding through the backyard. I still remember how cozy it felt. The inside had delicate pink wallpaper, creaky wooden floors, and this gorgeous clawfoot tub in the bathroom. One of those places where the hosts live next door, and they make you breakfast in the morning. I loved it immediately. When we weren't with our relatives, my little brother and I spent our time exploring the grounds, skipping rocks, splashing around in the shallow parts of the river. It was peaceful, quiet in the way old places sometimes are, like the air itself had settled long ago. That night, after a long day of hiking and visiting, we all turned in early. My brother made a pallet on the floor in my grandparents' room. I was in my dad's room on a metal folding cot at the foot of his bed. I remember how heavy my limbs felt. I barely managed to pull the covers over myself before I was out cold. I don't even remember my dad turning off the light. Sometime later, I woke up. There was no sudden noise, no breeze, just I was awake. I blinked a few times, adjusting to the dim light spilling in through the thin curtains. At first, everything seemed completely normal. I could see the room in perfect detail. Dad was still sleeping. His wallet and belt were on the dresser, just like before. My jacket was still hanging on the hook above my shoes near the door. Nothing had moved. I wasn't sure why I'd woken up. Maybe I needed a drink of water, or maybe I had to use the bathroom. But as I tried to move, I realized I couldn't. Not even a finger. I remember this creeping feeling starting in my chest, like a cold knot tightening. I tried again, harder. Nothing. My arms were lead. My legs would not respond. I couldn't even turn my head. I wasn't dreaming. I could see everything, every shadow, every detail. The stillness in the room felt wrong, like time had slowed but had not completely stopped. That's when I noticed them. Two figures, short, maybe 3 or 4 feet tall, stood silently beside my dad's bed. They hadn't been there before. I would have noticed. And they weren't human. Their bodies were dark green but shimmered strangely in the light, almost glittery. Their heads were elongated, shaped kind of like the aliens from Alien vs. Predator. But this was years before I ever saw those movies. When I did finally watch them, I remember freezing up, the memory crashing back like a wave. These figures looked just like that. Tall, narrow skulls with no visible mouth or eyes. At least, not in the way that we have them. Each of them had something. Tools or weapons of some kind, I couldn't tell. They were the same green, glittery color, shaped like guns but smoother, like they had been carved from the same strange materials as their bodies. They didn't speak aloud, but I could still hear them, like they were placing the thoughts directly into my mind. One of them, standing closest to my dad, said, "Okay, now we just need this one." And the other replied, "I've already done the two in the other room." I felt my heart start to pound in my chest. My grandparents, my little brother. The second one turned towards me. "What about this one?" it asked. The first one sounded irritated. "We don't need that one. You know that. Just the males." It was so casual and dismissive, like I was just extra. But the second one didn't stop looking at me. "It can see us." The first one shrugged. "It doesn't matter. but hurry and do it if you must. Then the second one began to walk towards me. I was screaming on the inside. Every part of me wanted to run and to scream and to throw something, but I was frozen solid, completely helpless. All I could do was stare at this thing approaching me, calm and silent. And I swear it smiled, just a little, like it enjoyed that I was afraid. I fought harder than I've ever fought in my life to move, to blink, to make a sound, but nothing happened. And then, there was nothing. The next thing I remember was sunlight coming through the window. My body was drenched in sweat. It felt like I hadn't slept at all, like I'd been awake the whole night, trapped in that room in that moment. I tried to tell my family I'd had a weird dream, but no one had experienced anything strange. No one believed me. We stayed at that house for a few more days, and I barely slept another hour while we were there. I kept waiting for something else to happen, but it didn't. Still, I couldn't have been more relieved when we packed up and drove away. It's been nearly 25 years now, but I can still picture every inch of that room. The wallpaper, the exact hook my jacket hung from, my dad's belt buckle on the dresser. And them, the way they looked, the sound of their voices in my head. I've had dreams since then, nightmares sometimes. But nothing has ever felt as real as that night in that little yellow house. Because I don't think it was a dream. The Haunting of Steve, from Catherine. Around the age of 5, I got scared about something. It was probably a ghost in my closet or something stupid like that. My brother Sam said that there was a scary ghost named Steve, and that's when it all started. After that, there was a bunch of creepy events that took place in our home. It began with small stuff like me and my family hearing noises, or seeing things in the corners of our eyes. But that was it, until it wasn't. After that, things just went downhill. I think the first really weird thing that happened was this. I was lying down on the bed we had in the living room at the time, and I heard footsteps. So I assumed it was my older brother and brushed it off. I closed my eyes, but not all the way. They were open just enough for me to see the tiniest little bit. In that tiny little bit, I saw a shadow figure move towards the end of the bed and sit down with its back facing me. Then it just sank down into the mattress, then into the floor. So I opened my eyes, and nobody was there. I assumed that was my brother as well. After that, I would sometimes hear footsteps, or something that, as of writing this, has just started happening. Voices. Fast forward a couple of years. I think I was around 7 or 8 at the time. I was bringing blankets from upstairs in my bedroom to downstairs to place on the couch. As I was turning the corner to walk down the hallway, something pulled my hair. And I want to note, there is nothing on that wall that could have pulled my hair, especially not with that much force. So I sprinted down the hallway and down the stairs. I once saw a chair spin on its own. That chair is not one that can be spun by the wind, and there's no wind in my bedroom. A different time, I was at a carnival with my family and my cousins. We were walking around when I felt something step on the back of my shoe. I looked back to see if it was my third brother, the youngest of all my older brothers, because he likes doing that to me in public. Or I thought it could be my cousin. But there was no one behind me. The shoes I was wearing at the time were hard to get on, so again, it wasn't just the wind. I've also had some very weird, scary dreams since Sam came up with Steve. But I don't know if that's connected or not. A plate once flew off the table when everyone in the room was not even paying attention to it. A water bottle that was on the floor once started rocking back and forth on its own. A poster once flew off my wall. And I still hear voices. I still see things. and I do believe there is something named Steve that lives in my house. But yeah, thank you, Sam, for coming up with Steve, the ghost that will haunt us all till the day we die. And thank you to my family for making Steve a huge joke.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Kikimura. From Anon 44778810231023. I'm a big fan of the show. My friend just explained to me a paranormal encounter, and I cannot quite figure out what it is or how to classify it. I'm just looking for a professional opinion and some sort of explanation. I'll explain this story from the perspective of my friend. The annual St. Patrick's Day party started off just as you'd expect, with people sharing stories and watching the Bruins, and of course, having a few beers. As the night wore on and guests came and went, my best friend's son, O, had a few too many drinks. For some context, O is in his mid to late 20s, with long, straight black hair down to his shoulders. He's a very quiet kid who travels frequently, visiting places all over Europe and Asia. From his travels, he's developed a deep spiritual connection, believing in different forms of voodoo, crystals, and energies. Because of this, we don't have much in common, and we aren't very close. As the night got later, everyone had left, even O's father. O asked my husband for a hairbrush at one point, and when he handed him one, O started smiling strangely at himself in the mirror, brushing his untamed hair with almost childlike joy. Honestly, I wasn't sure he'd ever brushed it before. At this point, my husband and I just chalked up O's odd behavior to the alcohol. We offered him a place to stay for the night, even though he only lived 5 miles away. We didn't want him to drive. He agreed. My husband helped him, practically crutching him, as he drunkenly stumbled up the stairs into my daughter's bedroom, since she was away at college. I followed shortly after to tidy up the connecting bathroom while my husband helped O settle into bed. As I folded a towel, I suddenly heard a woman's voice, faint and warped. I couldn't make out the words, but it sounded eerily like my deceased mother. Frozen with shock, I rushed back into the bedroom. What I saw made my blood run cold. My husband stood there, wide-eyed, as O stood on top of the bed. But it wasn't O anymore. His long black hair had turned blonde, and his face had shifted, almost resembling my mother's. Yet something was terribly wrong. The nose and mouth had twisted into a long, sharp beak, like a plague doctor's mask, fused with human flesh. I remember screaming something like, "Who are you?" and "Get out of my house." And then I ran like mad down the stairs, with my husband right behind me. We huddled in the kitchen, crouching behind the counter, our hearts pounding. We waited there for about 15 minutes. Then we heard footsteps coming down the stairs. It was O. He looked just like he had at the start of the night. Long black hair, flushed but normal, his voice trembling as he said, "I should go home now. I shouldn't be here." Without waiting for a response, he sprinted out the front door into the rainy night, leaving his coat and shoes behind. We assumed he ran the whole 5 miles home, because we saw him the next day at lunch with his father, acting completely normal. He never mentioned what happened, never apologized. It was as if he had no memory of it all. What bothers me the most is that deep down, I don't think it was just the alcohol. And if something was wrong with O, I just hope we find a way to help him. But I just can't seem to shake the feeling that whatever was in that room that night was not O. Unknown Encounter of Summer 2011. From She Wants the Diddly. This story begins back in my high school days. Around this time, I was living at my aunt's house, which I was rarely at due to family issues. This was one of many times I was out for an extended period of time, roughly a month. This is a large amount of time for a high school-aged kid to be away from the house without contact, I know, but I digress. I was in a small town called Forney, Texas, at a trailer that belonged to two buddies of mine, brothers that we'll call B and A for anonymity. For reference, the trailer's size was not a single wide, but one of those smaller pull-behind trailers that one would use for camping. One room with a bed, one small couch, and dining table close to the front door on the right side of the trailer. And on the left side, two bunk beds and a small restroom. All in all, I would say the length between the bedroom door and the restroom door was about 15 to 20 feet. One night, B, A, and I were up playing video games and otherwise bullcrapping, as young adult males tend to do. A, the younger brother, had an argument with B and departed the trailer, going to his parents, who happened to be right next door. After that, for the rest of the time in the trailer, it was just B and I playing video games, Skyrim and Dark Souls to be specific, until about 1 a.m. B had gotten tired at that point and went to his room. And then I promptly heard very loud snoring, which lasted basically the rest of the night, until the event takes place. While he was sleeping, I switched games from Skyrim to Dark Souls, in order to make more progress on my account. If there's one thing about this series of games that readers may know, or need to know, doing anything is about a headache and a half, including just traversing the map. Which is why it took around 3 more hours and a crapload of Starbucks mocha frappuccino bottles for me to make it from my last bonfire to An Orlando. Once I'd made it to this point in the game, it was right around 4 a.m., and my eyes needed a break, big time. So I decided to cut the game off, and all the lights, and try to get some shut-eye. Before I laid down, I went to the left side of the trailer to use the restroom, leaving the door wide open while I did. I then grabbed a blanket off one of the bunk beds and went back to the small couch to lay down. The coffee I'd been drinking all night had caught up to me and made it impossible for me to sleep, so I just lay there. After about 15 minutes, I got bored and decided to bring my phone out and scroll Facebook, since I wasn't going to be able to sleep anyway. Around this time, I started to feel very cold. So naturally, I put my head under the blanket and continued to scroll. A few minutes later, I noticed that the trailer was oddly quiet. B was no longer snoring, and I couldn't hear the crickets outside chirping in the night. No wind either, no cars moving on the highway, nothing. That's when I heard and felt footsteps moving across the trailer to the restroom, and someone closed the door. I assumed this was B, and immediately went back to scrolling. Well, I tried to, at least. A wave of fear and dread suddenly came over me, as I heard and felt the footsteps start walking towards me. The restroom door never opened again, nor had I heard the toilet flush. The footsteps quickened, as if sprinting towards me, and they stopped right next to me. My hearing suddenly dampened, and in my left ear began a loud, low-pitched ring. I felt a pressure on my left thigh, pressing down as if to hold me on the couch. And then in my left ear, the ringing cuts out and a voice says my name clearly and loudly. I ripped the blanket off my head as fast as I could to see what or who it was, but nothing was there. By this point, my hearing was back to normal, and I could hear B in the room, snoring. I yelled his name, and he woke up in a panic, asking me what was wrong. So I told him what happened. He got ticked off at me and just went back to bed. Naturally, I didn't sleep the rest of the night, and I've never had an experience like this before or since. My Mini Museum, from Pumpkin Mama 2022. It all started nearly a year ago, June of 2024, when I first entered my Titanic-obsessed era. I've always loved to collect things and enjoy displaying my collections. However, my Titanic collection quickly became my pride and joy. It started small with two tiny black shelves adorned with a mini white star line tea set, a few replica cards and small photos, and a picture frame with a photo of the ship in it. But within a few months, it grew and grew, and now takes over most of my home office. Via the Titanic Museum gift shop in Tennessee and eBay, I have acquired everything from artifact and newspaper replicas to a first-class maid doll, to books written by survivors, and a real piece of Titanic coal. So naturally, the energy is going to find its way in somewhere among all that, right? The very first thing I noticed was that a small replica postcard I kept on my shelf was almost always turned over, or all the way on the floor when I came into my office in the mornings. After a couple of weeks of this, I tried to replicate what may be causing it to fall, as it never happened while I was in the room. I slammed the door a few times, stomped my feet, blew at it, even turned on the ceiling fan, but it didn't budge. Yet, if I were to leave the room for a few hours and come back, it would almost always be lying on the floor. Eventually, I clipped it onto a board with several other small papers, so that it wouldn't slide under the door where my cats could get a hold of it. It hasn't moved from there, but there have been others. That mini tea set that I mentioned earlier. Well, one day I was sitting at my computer working, when I suddenly hear this small crash sound from behind me. I turned to look, and after a moment, I noticed one of the tiny little teacups on the floor. This was very strange to me, because, you see, when I had set up the tea set, I had stuck each piece down with a piece of sticky putty, so that they would not rattle and fall as someone walked across the floor, or if the door was ever slammed. So, how in the world did that little cup just pop loose, fly out far enough to fall off the shelf and onto the floor? This was the moment I sort of began to realize that something odd was happening in this room. Fast forward to just recently. I've added a new display, dedicated to a couple of period dramas that I'm really into right now. I won't say the name of the shows, but they're about Catherine the Great and Anne Boleyn. Now, obviously, I don't own any real artifacts related to these two women. I wish. But I do own, however, authentic screen-used props. And through all of that, I have developed a theory of my own about spirits and hauntings. My theory is that ghosts can attach themselves to items that have become heavily associated with them, whether they actually came into contact with these items in life, or the association happened through modern media, such as, in my case, an actor's portrayal. Also, it stands to reason that spirits could attach to replica artifacts as well, whether on purpose or even by mistake. And this would explain my Titanic roommates. It has been confirmed that the museum from which I purchased most of these items is haunted. So it seems perfectly likely to me that some lost soul could have seen something and thought, "Oh, I think that's mine." And then I brought it home to me. I'm no paranormal expert by any means, but these are just my theories based on my experiences. So the activity continued, quite heavily now, to the point where I have actually been touched before. I've had my arms and clothing gently grabbed, and once I was putting away clothes during a thunderstorm and felt a sort of hug sensation on my leg as a loud boom of thunder occurred. I will admit, I found that last one to be rather touching, and it made me crack a smile. On the Titanic side of the room, I've noticed that I find more items displaced during the winter, when it's especially cold in my office. For context, we made a bit of a mistake when we hired the contractors who built the add-on to our home that includes my office, and they did not put insulation under the floor. So when it's cold, the room really feels it. I mean, sometimes it gets so cold that the hardwood floors make your bare feet burn a little. I caught on very quickly that my 1912 friends do not like that. Not at all. It's not hard to imagine why, so now I always keep a heater on during cold weather, and that seems satisfactory. As long as there's some light too, of course. Yeah, I learned that pretty quick too. They don't like the dark. And again, it's easy to see why. So I always keep batteries in an old-fashioned nautical-style lamp that I'd found at the dollar store. And I turn it on every night, along with my fish tank and dull fairy lights on the walls. That seems to suffice. Now on the historic royalty side of the room, things are a bit different. More subtle, but still there. For example, once when I cleaned a glass case, I noticed a very odd pattern in where the dampness of the cleaner settled on the glass. It looked like lace, or like an old doily. Other times I find my clothes off the hangers and lying on the floor of my closet, but it's only ever my dresses. I find fingerprints on freshly cleaned glass, and on the night of any anniversaries, I hear the faintest crying in the night. Call me weird, but when I hear it, I get up and go check on my paranormal companions. It's the least I can do, really. I come in, turn on some soft music or white noise on the small TV, and just be there. Sometimes I work on my computer. Other times I fix a snack and bring it in, or watch some TV. I enjoy these late-night interactions. My family lovingly teases me that these spirits are like my kids. But honestly, I do appreciate them in their presence. Sometimes when I feel stressed out or when I'm nervous, I feel such a comforting presence in my office. No words, no touches, just a presence. Who would I be not to return the favor, right? And sometimes after I've visited in the night, I find a small, subtle thank you in the morning. Maybe it's a rainbow on my drive to work. Maybe my hair looks extra nice that day. Or I find an extra piece of candy in the bag when I thought I was all out. Those types of things. Could be coincidence, sure. But I like to see it this way. The timing has spoken for itself, in my opinion. Sure, this may not be the scariest story, but I wanted to share it anyway. Remember, not all hauntings are bad. Sometimes it's just a lost soul, or many, simply looking for a friend. I'm scared of farms. From Yana. This all started when I was 6. I lived on a farm with my grandparents, my Nana and Papa. Keep in mind, we also had a cornfield. I was playing with animals on the farm, having a great time. Then one of the animals walked up to the cornfield and began to stare. At first, I figured it was looking at a butterfly or some bug, so I thought nothing of it and continued to play. Eventually, it was time for dinner. I went inside and ate, and when I came back out, I saw that more animals were just staring into the corn. I saw that our dog was standing over there too, and I called his name. Max! Dinner time! I swear, he turned his head all the way around like a doll. I screamed and ran back inside, scared for my life. I told my papa. When he went outside to check what was wrong with the animals, they seemed normal. Was I just seeing things? I wondered, and I went back out. I called out for Max again. Max! Dinner! This time he looked at me with lifeless eyes. He barked at the field, as if he was telling it he would be back. He walked weird, too, with a sway to his step. And when he ate dinner, I swear that I saw his tongue was black or darker. After he was done, he went back outside and began to bark at all the farm animals. When he did that, I could have sworn all the animals' eyes went black. Pitch black. I don't know if I was seeing things because of how late it was or if it was real. I went to bed and tried not to think about it. When I woke up, I went outside to feed the animals. They were gone. All of them. My family looked for 2 hours. When we got back, we were basically shaking our heads. No idea what happened. But then we saw one of the pigs in the field. I rushed off to go put it back in its pen. But when I got to it, its eyes were gone. I moved out 2 weeks later. I live with my dad now. I never went back to that farm. I don't know if I was dreaming the whole thing or what. Now the only paranormal things I experience are ghosts in my apartment. But I can't stop thinking about Max and the way he looked me in the eye. An update after 4 months. Though I said I never went back, I decided to head back anyway. It looked so gray or dark, you could say. My Nana and Papa had moved in a hurry, basically abandoning the place, and now it had a smell to it. What I didn't expect to find were all the dead animals just lying all over the place. My dog, Max, was dead, sitting up like he was guarding the field, but lifeless. I swear then that I heard him bark, but the sound came from the opposite direction. When I turned, I didn't see anything. I went to look, to check things out, but when I came back, I saw in the distance where I'd left the dog. Something was eating on it. By then it was dark out, and all I could make out was this goat-looking thing. Whatever it really was, it was tearing into my dead dog. Obviously, this scared the crap out of me. So I walked backward slowly, got back in the truck, and drove off. Back at home, I tried to forget about everything. I don't know what's going on, but there's a reason we've all moved away from that farm.
Persil sorgt schon seit 1907 für tiefenreine Wäsche, auch bei den Johnsons, oder Anna?
Das stimmt. Sogar meine Oma hat schon mit Persil gewaschen.
Und als Dankeschön für über 100 Jahre Vertrauen gibt's jetzt bis zu 15 Euro Rabatt auf unser Bestes.
Das mit der roten Schleife.
Genau, made in Germany. Mehr Infos auf unserbestes.persil.de.
Wenn es tiefenrein ist, ist es Persil.
The White Thing. From Elixir. During the summer, I usually stay over at my grandma's house. It's quiet and peaceful, and I'm often there alone. One day, my cousin B came over while my grandma was at work. I decided to make some food for both of us. While I was getting it ready, I heard a tap, tap, tap at the window. I looked up, just in time to catch a glimpse of a white figure dashing out of view. It moved fast. Too fast for me to see any features. At first, I brushed it off. I've always been the paranoid type, sometimes seeing things that aren't really there. I finished the food, then went to the room B was in. As I passed through the living room, I saw it again. The same white figure, darting away. But this time it made a different sound. A horrible screech, like a drunk man screaming for food. I swear I heard the word food. I stopped right in my tracks. My skin went cold. When I finally stepped into the room, B looked at me with wide eyes. "You okay? You look like you've seen something scary," he asked. I said I was fine, then asked if he wanted to play some Minecraft. That was his favorite game, and it helped to distract both of us. We played, ate, and built a little house in-game. Eventually, he asked if we could go to the park. I said sure, and completely forgot about what I'd seen earlier. The park was only a short walk away, and I didn't have my license yet. As we walked down the quiet road, I heard rustling in a bush nearby. I looked, and there was the white figure, standing still. And now I could see it more clearly. There were no eyes, no mouth, no face at all. Just a tall, pale, skinny figure, not moving, just watching somehow. I didn't think. I grabbed my cousin and ran. He kept asking, "What's happening? What's going on?" Then behind us came a voice, screaming,
"Food! Food!"
We ran, faster, my cousin now crying, until we reached the nearest house. I banged on the door, screaming for help. An older man opened up, and when he saw us, the two of us terrified, sobbing kids, he let us in without hesitation. Between gasps and tears, we told him everything. He asked for our parents' numbers. We gave them to him, and about an hour later, my parents came by and took us home. It's been years. I almost forgot about that day, until I stumbled upon a local forum online. To my shock, there were other people. Tons of people, actually, from my town who had similar stories. The white figure, screeching voice, something about hunger or food. When I asked B if he remembered the incident, he said he didn't. Not the park, not the creature, nothing. That's when my parents pulled me aside, and they told me a story. All the way back in the 1800s, one of our ancestors, a man named Elijah, lived on the outskirts of town. He was always angry and always suspicious. One winter, a traveling family stopped near his land, starving, cold, and desperate. They knocked on doors, begged, pleaded. Elijah didn't just turn them away. He invited them in, fed them too, and let them sleep there. Then, sometime in the night, he slaughtered them. Every one of them. Mother, father, two kids, even the infant. No one really knows why. The bodies were never found. Just blood-soaked floorboards and screams heard by neighbors. Elijah vanished into the woods the next day. The locals said he was cursed, that something was attached to him or following him. Some kind of spirit tied to hunger and betrayal. Since then, they say every few generations, someone in the family gets a visit. Amazon story. From Roman. I'm 20 years old and live in Utah. I want to share a scary story from my old job. I used to be an Amazon delivery driver. But I wasn't your normal Amazon delivery driver. We handled the heavier packages, like pool tables, gas tanks, large TVs, couches, furniture, desks, long poles, workout equipment, slides, car tires, tractor tires, all types of grills, whatever. The heaviest thing I ever had to move was a 500-pound smoker, the green egg things, and a ping-pong table. Can't forget about the long whiteboards. Those were too big to fit in the elevator, so we ran the stairs. I liked the job, because I was a driver, aka the boss, and I had good work ethic. I used to be a professional mover, but it got too slow in the wintertime, so I didn't have a choice. I packed up and moved on. I'm gonna miss those cash jobs and the office moves and stacking vaults. So I was familiar with moving heavy items in tight spaces or up and down the stairs. The job was easy. We would waste time standing around in the driver's meeting, laughing at whoever screwed up or forgot to do something correctly. My favorite part was the question of the day. Supervisor would ask some good questions, like favorite animal, favorite color, favorite food or car, or if you're stuck on an island, what three things you would bring. Once we were done wasting time, the driver would grab the truck and park it at the bay door. The helper would start scanning packages and report any damaged packages to HR. Once everything was loaded, we would double-check everything and then head off to the Maverick for drinks or snacks. Personally, I went for a 1-gallon water bottle. That's it. Well, on this day, I was a helper. I got paired up with this thing. Picture Justin Bieber, just skin and bones, wearing police glasses and a tattoo on his forehead. Cuts all over both his arms and a weird smell that followed him everywhere. Poor guy managed to smoke an entire pack of cigarettes during the driver's meeting. My man was inhaling two at a time and thought it was cool, I guess. I don't know. Whatever floats your boat, I guess. So we load up and we're off to Maverick. I went to use the restroom and he's yelling at the cashier about his card declining. Me being the guy I am, I pay for 10 cigarettes, hoping mom and pop don't ask. I'll call this kid Jackson. He forgot to put the small box truck in park, and it rolled into the street. Thankfully, it didn't hit anybody, and no one else saw it. We deliver a couple of boxes, keeping an okay pace. Then we went to Rose Park. Thankfully, all the houses were on the same block, which made it nice and easy. Then we sped past a large family, and I could hear them yelling at us, saying, "Slow down, you're going too fast!" But my driver gave zero Fs that day. He kept going. I glance over at the speedometer, only to see 50 in a 25-mile-per-hour zone. I whispered, "Christ, man." We take a couple hard lefts and rights. It felt like the truck was gonna roll. I didn't say anything. I just looked forward, holding on tight to the old crap handle. We ended up doing a U-turn and driving past that teed-off family again. Jackson didn't hear me cursing under my breath. He was blasting some screamo music. I couldn't wait for the day to come to an end. It was around then someone from the family threw something. It hit the truck pretty hard. There was a loud bang. But Jackson kept on going, giving zero Fs about the damage. We drove to a different location delivering packages. We were halfway done. As we were driving to the next delivery, it was a business in Logan. And there was this blacked-out SUV following us. The car kept honking and swerving at us. Jackson decided to speed up to get away from him. But what I didn't know was that he was planning on brake-checking that car. He did, and the SUV hit us hard. They pushed us into the intersection, and we hit an old woman. Jackson gets out and starts yelling at the SUV that hit us, while I run and check on the elderly woman. I then began to hear gunshots. I dropped down, hugging the red Honda nearby, the woman's car. When things went quiet for a few seconds, I peered inside the car. The woman seemed okay. I then began to carefully make my way to the black SUV. But when I got to the back of the van, the SUV was gone. One minute it was there, and the next it was just gone. I went back to the van to see the damage, but then I found him. Jackson was lying face first on the ground, a pool of blood below him. I asked if he was okay, but there was no answer. I called 911, asking them to ping my cell phone to send two police and two ambulances, whatever they could muster. I let them know that my driver has been shot. We were the Amazon box truck. We hit an old lady in a Honda. The operator told me to calm down. On the Amazon work phone, I called my supervisor, and I told him about the accident, and that Jackson was dead. And the people who did this managed to get away. That could have been me. Then again, Jackson was in some bad situations, as I understand it. It's just that no one deserves to end up like that. Young Newlyweds. From Dewey Ued. In the year 1980, my mother Jane and my dad Nick had me out of wedlock and surprisingly were able to hide it from my meemaw. My meemaw was strict religious, even though her past life wasn't the most graceful. Lord bless my meemaw. I'm thinking she's going to outlive us all. Well, about 6 months into my mother's pregnancy, my parents got married but didn't have a house yet. So they lived with my dad's father, my papa, in the big house, which the big house my dad and his 12 siblings grew up in. That's a whole other story. Well, just after my mother gave birth to me, my parents went out looking for a house and found one just outside of town. Maybe 5 miles out on the ridge in the middle of some farmland. My dad told me when they first looked at the house, the upstairs windows were boarded up, but the house looked well enough to live in, so they contacted the person to rent the place. The landowner asked my dad if he was sure they wanted to live there. My dad told me it was odd. The man was basically, "You don't want to live in that house." But my parents didn't have too much of a choice. I mean, I wasn't even a year old, and my mom was pregnant again with my little sister, who was also born with CDLS, which made her completely disabled. My mother was 16, and my dad was 21. Anyway, the house was a done deal. When my parents went back to that place, my dad told me he was confused, because the upstairs windows boards were now lying under the windows. Well, they moved in with what they had at the time. A couple bean bags, a small tube TV, a small bed, a cat, and a crib for me. The house was fairly small. Think the upstairs was just room for storage. I was still in a crib at the time, but I think my parents lived there when I first began to walk and talk, because I was able to not like being in that house. My dad told me that the cat they had would never go in the house. He would attack you if you tried to bring him in. This story really stands out to me because not just my parents, but every uncle and aunt that had been there and stayed in that place had an experience with the evil there. My parents told me they would hear a man and a woman arguing in the middle of the night, and the longer they stayed there, the longer the arguing would last. My uncle Ed, who was 10 years old at the time, would stay there with his big sister, or my mom. My uncle Ed told me he was terrified of that house, but to get away from Meemaw, he would stay there. Uncle Ed said he would sit there on the floor all night, listening to these whispers and watching the shadows move around the house. And at times, he would hear arguing. He was terrified awake. My other uncles, especially my dad's brothers, had experienced sounds and a heavy feeling in that house. I'm going to skip to the point where my parents had their last night in the house. My mom had told me that when she was pregnant with my sister Amber, she had heartburn all the time and had a terrible UTI. She said the last night they were there, there was a bad storm, and at this time, due to the experience she had in the house and her being terrified of the loud phantom arguing, she had a bedpan by the bed. One night she was in the bathroom and something kept walking by the bathroom door, pacing back and forth. She yelled for my dad, and of course, being the hard A he was, he came to the rescue. But since then, my mom has been too scared to go to the bathroom by herself at night. All the while, she's pregnant and had a bad UTI. That must have been miserable. Then top that experience off with a serious ghost problem. Well, their last night there was storming bad, and my mom had to go to the bathroom. She said at the time it was dark, and you could see the lightning flashing, lighting up the dark room and loud thundering. She had to pee, and then just under the thunder rolling, she could hear the ghostly arguing. And suddenly, I started to scream and cry. My mom woke up my dad and said, "Nick, I can't do this anymore. We have to get out of here." My dad then heard me along with the thunder of the storm and my crying and screaming. So he pops up out of bed, runs to my room, and he said he was met with a 7-foot shadow man leaning into my doorway. My dad barged through the threshold of my room, gets to my crib, but I'm not there, and yet somehow he can still hear me right there crying. He tries to turn the light on, but there's no power. My dad said he got to looking for me in the dark, and somehow he found me under my crib. He grabs me and takes me out of my room to my mom. He gets her up and out of the house into the stormy rain. They get to the van, get inside, and the dang thing wouldn't start. There was someone that lived about a mile down the gravel road, so my parents took off toward that house to call my Uncle Art to come and get them. Well, my Uncle Art picks them up, takes them to his house. They stay there. When the storm was over, they went back to get what they had out of the place, and they never went back. My dad said when they got there to get their things, the power in the house was on, and the van started right up without a problem. My mom and dad stayed married for 41 years. My mother passed away from cancer 4 years ago, and my little sister passed away at age 42, exactly to the day my mother died. My wife and I have been married 19 years. We go eat supper with my dad every night. We love him very much, and we don't want him to be alone. Ghost face in my old bedroom. From Seyo. This happened when I was about 6 or 7. I can't quite remember everything exactly. I lived with my parents next to a small playground, and in the neighborhood there were many kids my age that I used to play with quite often. Our old apartment was on the 2nd floor, and my bedroom had a huge window that basically replaced one of the walls. That window also faced right down to the playground, and I used to check from there if kids were out and would go join them to play. When we moved from that apartment, we went basically to the other side of the playground, from where I only had about 2 minutes of walking to said playground. The new apartment even had a small garden and a fish pond. Since I couldn't check from my window anymore if kids were playing on the playground, I had to go there alone to check if someone was out there. On a nice summer day one day, when my father was out at work, I asked my mom if I could go to the playground, as at the time I could hear kids playing and laughing. Of course, my mom said I could go, and so I got ready, throwing on some shoes, and I went out. However, when I got there, it was empty. There was nobody else around. I was confused, because I swore I heard kids playing and laughing just a moment ago. So why was it empty now? It wasn't really a big place either. Only a slide and a couple swings. Some stone tables too, with games engraved into them. I thought maybe I'd heard some kids on their way to the playground, so I decided to stay and wait. While waiting, I went on the slide a few times, played in the sand, and soon I went over to one of the swings. From the swings, depending on which side you're sitting on, you could either look into the neighbor's gardens or onto the street ahead that was next to the underground car park entrance for the houses and apartments. Usually some older people that lived there would be in their gardens, and sometimes they would talk with us kids. Most of them knew our parents and us. But since no one was outside at the time either, I just sat on the swing and faced the street. As I was swinging, still waiting for the other kids to come play, our old apartment with the huge window was to my right. From the corner of my eyes, I saw a shadow to my right. So I looked over, expecting to see someone coming from their house. But there was nobody. And then I saw it. A figure, completely dressed in black, stood right at my old bedroom's window, staring down at me. The figure looked human but wrong, like a really tall adult dressed in a Halloween costume. But this was the middle of summer. The sight startled me, but the real scare got me when I saw its face. The figure's face was exactly like the mask from the Scream movies. But it wasn't a mask. I could clearly see that the face was no mask at all, but flesh. Black eyes, a long, silently screaming mouth, and pale white skin. It was so tall, too. The head reached almost all the way to the top of the window. But I couldn't see any arms or legs, just black cloth. I stopped swinging, got up, and blinked, confused. Then the figure turned around and left the room to where the bedroom door was. I panicked and immediately ran back home without looking back, telling my mom that there were no kids and I didn't want to play alone. I never saw the figure again since that day, and I still can't get my head around why I heard children playing so clearly, but saw no one when I got on the playground. So many short stories today, but I guess the fears are going to be longer lasting for a lot of us, especially for those who witnessed the unexplained and terrifying. Whether you're delivering packages for Amazon, or just a little kid at the playground trying to have some fun, keep in mind, the unexplained and horrific could show up at any time. Good night. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Unexplained Encounters. I've been your host, Darkness Prevails, and you can find me on X at Dark Prevails for some really bad opinions. If you've got a story of the unexplained, send it to me at darkstories.org so I can feature it on the show. Help the show grow by following and rating Unexplained Encounters on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Till next time, everyone, stay safe out there and stay creepy, because this world is a strange one.